Kalimera, or good morning. Welcome to Chapter 2. Having learned the alphabet, the vowels, both short and long, and the diphthongs, now we got to turn to some other basics before we can jump into the actual language itself. So today we want to focus on the accents. There'll be three of them with six rules. The syllables will have four rules for how you split up a word into syllables. And then we'll be introducing some others like the enclitics and proclitics. And then, of course, you've got to learn how to do punctuation in Greek. Before we jump into Chapter 3, where we actually start the present active indicative verb, we want to go back and do a quick review of English grammar that'll set us up for the following grammatical structures that we'll be using in the rest of the course. We begin with how to slice up a word into various syllables. There's going to be basically four rules for this, and don't obsess over this. A lot of times the splits are very natural and almost like in English, so don't obsess over this, but here are four rules for just to give you a ballpark on how to split it up into syllables. First of all, a consonant or a consonant cluster goes with the vowel that follows it. Now you may ask, what is a consonant cluster? A consonant cluster is like in English when you have two consonants that combine into a unit, similar to like ST, like start, or PR, like provide, or TH, he saith this or that. Or consonant clusters can also go to three consonants, the string, STR, that begin the word string. Now, how you'll know a Greek cluster is a Greek cluster is a couple consonants that can begin or end a Greek word. Now, the second rule is that two consonants are split, unless they're a cluster, of course. So whenever you see two consonants, you try to split them, unless it's a recognized consonant cluster. So the consonant goes with the vowel that follows it, and if you see two consonants that aren't a cluster, you split them. Easy enough. Rule 3 is also pretty easy. It says, if you see two vowels in a row, you split them, unless, of course, they're a diphthong. If they're a diphthong, they form a cluster of vowels, making one sound. There's only one vowel or diphthong per syllable. The final rule, or rule 4, is that if you see a compound word, you split between the two words that form the compound first, before you split things up into the other syllables within the words. So, for example, in English, we have the word overlook. So your first split is the word over, splitting it from the word look. And a lot of times in Greek, you'll have prepositions tagged onto the front of verbs and other things. And so you always split those prepositions off first before you do the rest of the syllabification. So to summarize, the first rule is that if you got a consonant or consonant cluster, it goes with the vowel that follows it. Second rule, you got a couple consonants in a row, you split them, unless they're a cluster. Third rule, you got a couple vowels in a row, you split them, unless they're a diphthong. And the final rule is you split between compound words. That's it. No problem. All right, let's look at how this takes shape in Greek. Rule 1. Consonant goes with the vowel that follows it. So the word ego, the epsilon on the front is by itself, the gamma omega, combined because the gamma, a consonant, goes with the omega that follows it. Same type of thing with lego. The lambda goes with the epsilon that follows it. Then there's a break because the gamma goes with the omega that follows it. Similarly, prophetes, the P rho omicron go together. You see the P-Rho consonantal cluster on the beginning, and then Phi-Eta go together because Phi is a consonant, goes with the vowel that follows it, and the Tase ends because the Tau goes with the Eta and the Sigma. Similarly, with
logos,
lambda goes with the omicron. There's a break because the gamma goes with the omicron that follows it. So it's
logos.
The second rule is you split two consonants, but keep consonant clusters together. So, for example, it's erketai. The rho and the ki are split. Two consonants, you split them. It's
Christos.
The kri is followed by the sigma tau are kept together rather than split because they're a consonant cluster. Very similar to in English where you have the word best and you finish with an st.
Adelphos.
Notice the split between the lambda and the phi. Again, two consonants, you split them. Rule number 3. Split the vowels, but keep the diphthongs together. So, for example, the word
theos,
you split between the epsilon and the omicron, because they're two vowels, so you split it there.
Theos. Pharisaios.
You split between the alpha iota, which is a diphthong, and you split that off from the omicron sigma that end the word pharisaios. Cardia, you have the kappa alpha rho, and you split between the rho and the delta, as in the previous rule. And then after the iota, you split the alpha off because there's two vowels, iota and alpha, in a row, so you split them. So it's cardia. And why don't we say ka-i? That's right. You're the brightest and best. You say kai because you recognize the alpha iota is a sneaky little diphthong, two vowels making one sound. Rule number 4, split between words, that is, in compound words. The word soon, means with, is added to the word ago. And so you split the soon off from the ago first before you do any of the other splitting of the syllables. So it's soon, ago. Rather than the nu, normally if you're just splitting it without splitting the words, the nu should go with the alpha. But in this case, the nu stays with the soon because soon is the word with. So it's sunago. Similarly,
op erkomai.
The word op on the front is actually a preposition as well, pasted onto the front of a verb. So the op comes off as a syllable rather than the p going with the epsilon rho that follows it. The p does not go as a consonant, does not go with the epsilon rho that follows it because you split between words first before you do the syllable splitting. So it's op erkomai. Now that we've got how to split up the syllables, in Greek, the last three syllables of a word are named. So, for example, anthropos, three syllables. The last syllable is the ultima,
pos.
The penult is the almost last. The thro is the second from the last syllable. It's called the penult. And then the one that comes before the penult is called the antepenult. So, an is the antepenult. So you have the antepenult, the penult, and the ultima. And we'll need to know these names because the accents will fall on these last three syllables. There are three accents in Koine Greek. They originally affected the tone of the word. So the acute is our first accent, and you'll notice that it rises. And so people believe that the tone of a person's voice rose. In Koine Greek, it simply was where you put the accent on the pronunciation of the word. So we'll simply use it as an accent mark. So it's lego, means I say. The grave is kind of the reverse of the acute, and you'll see that it drops down. And so originally the tone probably dropped down. The grave is used at the end of a word. So it's
adelphos,
which means brother. The circumflex, you see it kind of goes up and down. And so the voice kind of went up and down. And it will be used on words like autu, which means his. So the three accents are the acute, the grave, and the circumflex. In modern Greek, they've reduced the three accents down to a single accent, the acute. Now we need to explore how those accent marks are placed on words. The acute can be placed on any of the last three syllables, that is, on the antepenult, the penult, or the ultima. So, for example, it's
anthropos.
In that case, the acute lies on the antepenult. Lego. Here, the acute is found on the penult. And
theos,
where the acute is on the ultima. So the acute can be placed on either the antepenult, the penult, or the ultima, any of the last three syllables. The circumflex can be placed only on the last two syllables, on the ultima and on the penult. So, for example, it's
pharisaios,
where the accent is on the penult. Autu, the circumflex comes on the ultima. So the circumflex can lie either on the penult or the ultima, and cannot go back as far as the antepenult. Finally, the grave can only occur on the ultima, the last syllable. So, for example, it's
Christos,
with the grave accent on the ultima. Now, this potential placement chart is pretty helpful because I think it gives a visual that makes the placement of the accents fairly simple. So you see that the acute can occur in the antepenult, the penult, and the ultima. The circumflex is reduced by one, can only occur on the penult and the ultima. And the grave can only occur on the ultima. So it's kind of a 3-2-1 structure. Now that we know the potential that each accent has, there are six rules that structure how the accents are actually placed on words. The first accent rule is that nouns are retentive. That is, however you learn the base form of the noun, it tries to keep the accent in the same location, unless forced off of that syllable. So it's
angelos.
Then when
angelos
becomes
angelon,
the accent stays on the antepenult. Thus, nouns are retentive. The second rule is that verbs are recessive. That is, the accent mark, the acute, will always try to move back toward the antepenult as far as it can go in the case of verbs. So it's lego, but then becomes
legomen,
where the antepenult is accented. And so the accent moved from the penult back to the antepenult because verbs are recessive. The third rule is that if the ultima is long, then the antepenult cannot be accented. So it's
angelos.
And then when the final vowel is long on the ultima, then it becomes
angelo.
And so the accent mark is shifted from the antepenult to the penult. Even though the noun wants to retain it on the antepenult, the long vowel overcomes on the ultima and pulls it back to the penult. So it's angelo. Long vowels at the end affect how the accents are placed on the words. Rule number 4 is if the ultima is long and the penult is accented, then it must take an acute. In other words, it cannot take a circumflex as normal, but it has to take an acute because the final vowel, the ultima, is long. Angelos becomes angelo, and the accent on the penult must be an acute, cannot be a circumflex, because the final vowel is long. Now, Rule 5 says if the ultima is short and the penult is long and accented, that accent must be a circumflex. So if the ultima is short, in the case of akenos, the penult here, K, with the diphthong epsilon iota, is long, and therefore it must take a circumflex. Finally, the 6th accent rule is that if the acute is on the ultima, it becomes a grave when followed by another word without intervening punctuation. Thus,
kai theos ein.
You see the grave on the kai should have been an acute, but it goes to a grave because
theos
follows it. Similarly,
theos
should have an acute, but because it's followed by ein immediately, it goes to a grave. Now, some words in Greek have no accent at all. These are usually small words called clitics. That means they're words that lean on the preceding or following word. There are the proclitics, which come before pro, the word that carries the accent. So we have, for example,
ho Christos.
And you'll notice the ha has no accent of its own, but the accent is carried by the Christos. N R K, the N has only a breathing mark and no accent mark, but the accent mark is carried, the circumflex, in R K. Similarly, U Katelaben has no accent on the U, but the accent is carried by the katelaben. These words are called proclitics because they have no accents and they precede the word that does carry the accent for it. Now, the enclitics are words that have no accent that follow the word that carries the accent. So, for example, you have ego eimi. The ego carries the acute accent.
Protosmou
has two accents, which is rare on a Greek word, but the mu carries no accent of its own, so a secondary accent is added to the protos. These words that follow the words that are accented are called enclitics. All right, we've got the 3 accent marks, the acute, the circumflex, and the grave. Now let's turn to the breathing marks. On the front of a word, if it begins with a vowel, they use a smooth or rough breathing mark. Kind of looks like an English apostrophe or a reverse apostrophe. The smooth breathing does not affect the pronunciation, and so you have words like
Adelphos,
with the alpha initial carrying a smooth breathing mark over it. Similarly, ego has a smooth breathing mark over the epsilon. Now, the rough breathing does change the pronunciation, and so it adds a H sound to the beginning of the word. So it's
huios,
where the upsilon iota carries a rough breathing mark over it, which adds an H sound. Huios. The rough breathing is seen on the Greek word hex, which means six, and comes over into English as hexagon, a six-sided figure. Now, rhema, you'll notice, begins with a rho, but it also carries a rough breathing mark. And so rho is one of the exceptions. When rho begins a word, it must carry a rough breathing mark. It's interesting that modern Greek carries only one accent, the acute, and no breathing marks at all. Must be easier to learn modern Greek. The initial upsilon and rho always take a rough breathing, although it does not change the pronunciation of a rho initial word. So it's rhema, not hrema. You don't add an H sound to the beginning of a rho initial word. Two breathing marks, smooth and rough, three accents, the acute, the circumflex, and the grave. These marks will be over most of the words in the Greek language. So this section just gives you the ability to keep track of them a little bit. No big deal, but just want you to know what they are, kind of how they operate, so that there won't be any surprises. The punctuation marks in Greek are rather simple. The period is the same as the period in English. Also, the comma is the same as we have in English. The colon, you'll notice, is just a midline dot, just part of our colon, rather than two dots. And so there is a shift in the colon that way. And the most distinctive punctuation mark that you've got to watch out for is the question mark. And it looks like a semicolon, but it's really a question mark. Now, you realize that the original manuscripts contained none of these punctuation marks at all. So these are added later by those that have edited the Greek text for us. Make it easier to read. And easier is better, right? The apostrophe in Greek functions similarly to the apostrophe in English. In our English word, we have the word don't, where the O drops out and the apostrophe replaces it. In Greek, when you have two words like dia, autou, the final vowel on the dia is followed by the next word with a vowel, and so the final vowel, alpha, drops out and is replaced by an apostrophe. The ala hina, you'll notice that the final al hina with the apostrophe indicates that the alpha has dropped out. The next word starts with a vowel, so on this conjunction ala, the final alpha is dropped. The coronis marks a contraction between two words combined into one. So we have kai ego, and it becomes kago, and you see that the apostrophe goes over the alpha, indicating that the iota has dropped out. Kago means "and I." Now that we've got some of the basics down of the alphabet, the accents, and the breathing marks and things, let's go on and review some English grammar before we jump into the Greek grammar. Many of us are weak in English grammar. So let's first look at the parts of speech. There's about 7 of these parts of speech, and let's just get these down. We'll be having these same parts of speech in Greek. The noun is said to be a person, place, thing, or idea. So, for example, book is an example of a noun. Table, chair, car, etc. are all nouns. An adjective is a noun modifier. And so we have the big book or the red book with big and red modifying book, telling you what type of book it is. The article, we have a definite article in English, so we would say the book. And then we have an indefinite article, which Greek doesn't have, which is a book. So the difference between the book, which is particular, and a book, which is more general. The pronouns are varied, and we have the personal pronouns, things like I, you, we, she, it, they, and we have demonstrative pronouns like this and that, relative pronouns like who and which. So his book, the his, is a pronoun. And we'll study these various types of pronouns and how they work in Greek. Prepositions are usually little small relating words that relate things like in, by, because, or out. So by the book, or in the book, or on the book, those are all prepositions that relate the book to something else. Verbs are going to be a big focus for us in Greek. In English, we have words like swam, ran, studied, jumped. So the book closed. Closed is the verb. And the verbs will come in various tenses, in various persons. I closed, you closed, he, she, it closed. Various moods. Closed the book. Also versus tenses. Past tense, present tense, future tense. So moods, tenses, voice, things like active voice versus passive voice, we'll be looking at those in the next chapter. Finally, the last part of speech you want to look at is the adverb. The adverb modifies the verb, very much the same way as the adjective modifies a noun. Usually in English, they are ly words. The book quickly closed. Quickly modifies closed. Well, those are the parts of speech in English, and we'll have the same parts of speech in Greek. In English, we also have parts of sentences, or syntax. And so we have a subject about which something is said. Terry went to the store. Terry is the subject of the verb. The predicate is that which is said about the subject. He, which is the subject, drove the car. Drove the car tells something about the subject he. We should also note in English there's a predicate nominative, which will also be played with in Greek. It is I. And so with an is verb, the it and the I both are in what's called the nominative case. And so we'll be looking at how the predicate nominatives work in Greek as well as in English. Now, words combine into little clusters, phrases. Often we've heard of prepositional phrases. A phrase is a group of words with no verb, but used as a single part of speech. So, for example, the book on the table is mine. On the table is a prepositional phrase. modifying book. Clauses, on the other hand, are a group of words that have a verb associated. So, for example, the student who studied Greek by the ocean is relaxed. Who studied Greek is a clause. By the ocean is another prepositional phrase. The student is the subject. Is relaxed is the verb. Another way to list out the parts of a sentence or its syntax is using the abbreviations SVOM. S stands for subject, V for verb, O for object, and M for modifier. And many sentences will fit this SVOM structure. For example, in English, the girl is a subject, climbed is the verb, the tree is the object, and in the yard is the modifier, prepositional phrase. And so we just introduced these ways of abbreviating and isolating the various parts of a sentence at this point. Don't worry about it now, just put it in the back of your head. We'll be coming back to this later when you do exegesis. We want to focus a little bit on the nouns here, because the nouns in the first few weeks of Greek give us a great deal of trouble. And so I just want to lay out in English how the noun is looked at. For example, we have in English and in Greek, we have gender. We have a masculine noun, we have feminine nouns, and we have neuter nouns. And so, for example, we call the boat she. And so the boat is tagged with a feminine gender. A rock usually is considered neuter. Number is a second category. We have usually singular and plural. Other languages, and even Greek to begin with, had duals. But we just have a singular and plural as Greek does today. So it's skate and skates, where skates is plural and skate is singular. Now, the real difficulty in Greek comes with the role of cases. Case is how the noun works in a sentence. And in English, we have three cases. We have a nominative case, which is the subject of the sentence. So, for example, the girl received the award. The girl is in the nominative case. The accusative is the object of the sentence. So she drove the car. The car is in the accusative. The genitive is a possessive case. So, for example, the girl's car ran. The girl's, possessive of the car, and so it's in the genitive. This can probably be best seen in actually the pronouns, where the nominative pronoun is he, the accusative pronoun is him, and in English, the genitive pronoun is his. So, his car. He drove him. He is the nominative, him is the accusative. And it's his car that's the genitive in English. Now keep your eye on these cases, because they'll give us trouble in the first few weeks here, and they are extremely important. Greek will add two more cases to the nominative, accusative, and genitive. The dative case will be the case of the indirect object. In English, we would say, I told the story to the teacher. To the teacher is the indirect object, and it would be in the dative case. The vocative is the case of direct address. So in English, we would say, O Lord, save me. The O Lord is a direct address, It would be in the vocative in Greek. You should learn these five cases cold because this will be a difficult point when we get to chapter 4 and we first jump into the nouns. Now for the second chapter, vocabulary. Word number 1.
Adelphos.
Don't worry about the oo right now. That tells you how the genitive is formed in this particular noun. Or the
ho,
which tells you that this is a masculine form. It's the article that goes with this noun. We'll pick this up in chapter 4 when we cover the nouns. And it means brother. Word number 2 is akouo. And it means I hear or obey. Word number 3 is
doxa.
And it means glory or fame. Word number 4 is echo. And it means I have. Word number 5,
cosmos.
And it means world. Word number 6 is
curios.
And it means Lord, the Lord, or Sir. Word number 7 is
logos.
And it means word. Word number 8 is
petros.
And it means Peter. Word number 9 is
huios.
And it means son. And word number 10 is
pharisaios.
And it means Pharisee.